You're listening to Brave Girls with Tracy M, where we choose to empower you to be a better leader, mentor, and coach in the world. We'll share stories of people who have achieved great heights by overcoming adversity and rising to the challenge, all while pursuing their passions. These courageous people will inspire you to have faith in yourself and take bold action. Right here with the host of Brave Girls, Tracy M.
Episode 51, Rise to the Occasion with Rosemary Ostman. Today I chat with my Maryland friend, Rosemary Ostman, about her journey as a business owner of a boutique public relations agency, Rosecom, based in Hoboken, New Jersey. I work with Rosemary in one of my corporate positions and found her to be smart, dynamic, and passionate in that assignment. I recently ran into her at a local media event and immediately knew she needed to be a guest on my show. On this episode, she shares her Brave Girl story and how she knew that public relations was the career for her early on. Armed with a journalism degree from the University of Maryland, she spent time in the agency world in both Baltimore and New York before jumping into the entrepreneurial fray at 32 years old. Today, she role models for her children what it means to be a working mom. I think you'll love the work she's doing to advocate globally for the Committee to Protect Journalists, with the Press Uncuffed campaign, and how imprisoned journalists are now being freed as a result. Rosemary has a wealth of knowledge about this issue and explains what is happening with press freedom issues today. Rosemary encourages us to rise to the occasion in all that we do, and she shares how her daughter's bravery inspires her. As I wrap up episode 51, I'm excited to be one episode away from my 1-year anniversary as a female podcaster. My intention from the start has been to create an international platform to share my conversations with Brave Girls about their stories and the lessons they are here to share with others. I'm so glad I made this decision. I know that each and every episode has been a gift to the universe, and guests like Rosemary make all the effort worthwhile. So let's go and meet Rosemary. So welcome to Brave Girls with Tracy M. Tonight we have Rosemary Ostman, the founder and CEO of Rosecom, a boutique strategic communications firm based in Hoboken, New Jersey. And I first met her when she was the agency of record for a company that I was working for, and she was able to help us on so many levels with our PR and our investor relations. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I'm just so excited that we ran into each other recently at a public relations event at the Baltimore Sun, and I'm just so excited that we were able to reconnect. So I know that you've had your business for quite some time, and you've been doing this type of work for really a while, both for other people and now for yourself. So give us a little bit of the story behind how you got to where you are, because I also saw that you went to the School of Journalism. So did you have this dream of being a journalist?
I didn't actually. I knew I wanted to do public relations pretty young.
Wow.
I found out about the industry through kind of a silly way. My high school boyfriend's older brother was getting married to a woman who was in the public relations field. And I kind of admired her as a young teenager might admire an older person. And I thought I understood what public relations was based on what she did for a living. So I started to look into it, and I realized it was actually much broader. She was working for a radio station doing promotions, which sounded like fun. Mm-hmm. But when I looked into it, I realized that it was much broader than that, that there was a lot of strategic thinking, a lot of storytelling involved in it. And that just really appealed to me, even at that young age. Mm-hmm. I've always really enjoyed writing. And so it looked like an opportunity for me to explore that, and to leverage that interest and that talent that I had into a job. And that's how I got started thinking about it. And then I naturally found my way to the University of Maryland, because I too am a Maryland girl at heart. I live in New Jersey now, and that's mm-hmm. where my business is, but I grew up in Maryland. And the University of Maryland, within the School of Journalism, used to have one of the best, if not the best, public relations programs in the country. This was in the early 90s when I was in school. Mm-hmm. So there it was, right in our backyard, an opportunity to get a terrific education. And of course, years later, they realized that public relations probably didn't fit in the school of journalism. The purists
kicked it out.
So it now exists in a different department at the school. But I had a wonderful education there because I was learning the basics of journalism from Washington Post reporters, US News and World Report reporters. It was really a fascinating opportunity. So yes, I do have a journalism degree, but I've always been in the field of public relations.
Got it.
I started in Washington, DC, working for a department store as an advertising copywriter, and then quickly transitioned into PR, working for two different agencies in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. One was TBC, and the other one after that was called Carton Donofrio Partners. So I had a great run in Baltimore, and of course, that's where many of my business connections are today, which is how I know you.
Right.
Company that was based in Baltimore. And then in my late 20s, I started to get an itch. There was the dot-com boom was happening, mm-hmm. and there were lots of interesting things happening in business, but especially for PR. PR was having a bit of a heyday during that dot-com boom time because businesses were making a fortune based on a concept. And who's better to develop a concept than a PR person? So at that time, I realized there were bigger opportunities out there. And I took a job working in New York at a global agency. And I did that for 3 years. And over all of those years, I had gotten a lot of feedback from people saying, you know what, you really need to go out and start your own business. You need to do this for yourself. Why are you still working for other people? And in 2003, I finally took that step, and that's when I launched RoseCom. So we've been in business, it will be 16 years this year, which is
congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, and you were young too when you did it.
I was young. I was 32 when I launched the business.
And who was your first client? Do you remember?
Of course I do.
Okay.
So when I launched, I had the very good fortune of still having my mentor from Baltimore, Chuck Donofrio, who was mm-hmm. the CEO of Carton Donofrio Partners. He really encouraged me over the years to do my own thing. He also wanted us to be his PR capability.
Got
it. 32-year-old starting a new company, to have a partner agency like that to potentially give us business, and to feel like I was part of a bigger team was huge. And that really lasted for the first few years that we were in business, that the strength of that partnership. But they weren't the source of my first client. My very first client was actually my best friend from childhood. Her father owned a telecommunications company in Central California. And they were B2B, and they were launching a consumer product. And they needed some help raising visibility of their business and to kind of transition into a consumer space. And my friend had gone to work for him as his director of marketing. And she said to me, you know what? You're out on your own. Can you help us too? So it was a company called TMC Communications. Her father has since passed away and the business was sold. But it was another great way to get started out on my own with someone who was familiar to me. And her father, very much, John Marsh, was also a mentor to me as well.
Wow. Wow. That's great. And I know you've just grown leaps and bounds since then with, you know, landing other contracts. I know your team was extremely helpful to us as the company we were going through, you know, going into all these different countries and as well as buying businesses that were already existing businesses and announcing those acquisitions. And so I know your team was extremely strategic in what your recommendations were to us and giving us another set of hands to just get the word out about what was going on. So how big is your team now? Is it still, you know?
We are a boutique agency.
Right.
And so what that means is we are 9 people. Mm-hmm. And the difference between working with a firm like RoseCom, a boutique agency, versus a bigger firm is we're very hands-on with everything yes. we do. So when a company hires us, they know that I will be involved and that they will have other senior level people involved in their business. Sometimes in larger agencies, there's one team that goes in and sells the business, and then there's a different team that actually does the work.
I've experienced that as the client.
It's amazing to me that in the 20 plus years that I've been doing this, that has been the dynamic and it hasn't really changed. I feel almost cliche bringing that up because it's kind of a known thing, but mm-hmm. it really hasn't changed. So we have seen an opportunity to differentiate ourselves because we are hands-on senior level engagement in every piece of business that we have.
Yes.
As a business owner, that presents challenges for me because it's hard to scale mm-hmm. with that model. But we believe we do our best work with that. And the work is very rewarding because we're engaged at the highest levels of our clients' companies.
Yes.
So we've kept it that way for almost 16 years, and I don't imagine that will change anytime soon.
Yeah, well, you know, I gotta tell you, like, as the client, I really enjoyed having somebody at that, not being kind of sold by a senior person and then given a junior person to do the work. Is I knew exactly what I was getting, and I was getting a peer that was able to help me consult to the C-suite. And so there is definitely value in that. And being a small team, your resources were able to be brought to bear, whether it was video, graphic design, social media, like the whole gamut of marketing and communications. So, you know, congratulations to you. Now, I think you also have a couple passionate things that you kind of really thrive in the area of, with things like social justice campaigns and things of that nature. So talk a little bit about that and how you kind of have woven that into your business.
Absolutely. So when we first started, the idea of working on something nonprofit or pro bono wasn't really on the table. As a small business owner, it's all about cash flow.
Yes.
And, even when a nonprofit is able to pay, they're not able to pay much. So we really needed to establish our business before we could entertain bringing on those kinds of accounts. But mm-hmm. I'm happy to say in recent years, we've done more and more of that. And not only has it been rewarding for me personally, but it's been a great recruitment tool for younger professionals. I'm going to go ahead and use the word millennial. Millennials are, in my experience, very interested in impact mm-hmm. and giving back, maybe more so than any generation I've worked with. So for me to be able to bring on those kinds of campaigns has been, like I said, a great way to bring on that kind of talent and to keep that talent mm-hmm. because they're as interested in having a meaningful impact on something, on a cause, as they are in making money or professional development or anything mm-hmm. else. So a couple of examples of things we've taken on recently in this world, our number one lead cause has been press freedom, mm-hmm. which is something that makes total sense for our agency to be interested in mm-hmm. since we work with the media day in, day out. We've always advocated for this. We know the journalism world intimately, and we care a lot about transparency and the free flow of information. It is inherent to everything we do as a company. So I have been a supporter of the Committee to Protect Journalists for many, many years. But we saw an opportunity to do something more than just write a check a few years ago when I was doing a networking event for the University of Maryland Journalism School in New York. For graduates, the Washington area is the number one place where you find alums, but New York is number two. Mm-hmm. So they asked me to help put together a series of events, which we've been doing now for several years. And at the very first one, one of the professors, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter at the Washington Post, Dana Priest, gave a talk at the networking event about the fact that she had just finished teaching a course to her students about imprisoned journalists in other countries. And each student took on a different journalist who was in prison for journalism, wrongfully imprisoned. mm-hmm. and got to know their case intimately over the course of the entire semester and wrote a couple of thousand word article about that person, trying to get in touch with them, if possible, with their attorneys, with their family, really thoroughly researching their situation and working to get exposure for their case. And when the semester was over, the students felt like they couldn't just drop it. They wanted right. to do more. So they had an idea to make bracelets with the names of these imprisoned journalists on them and to sell them, similar to the POW bracelets that were sold during the Vietnam War. They wanted to do something like that to raise awareness of these journalists and to raise money to help free them. And one of the lead organizations, which I've already mentioned, the Committee to Protect Journalists, was the organization they wanted to raise money for. So Dana mentioned that in her talk that night at that networking event. And I went up to her a month or so later and said, hey, how's that campaign going? Maybe I can offer some pro bono PR support to that. And she said, oh, well, that would be terrific, but it's just an idea. We haven't done anything yet. So we worked with the students, my team worked directly with the students to conceive the entire campaign from how would we sell the bracelets, who would manufacture the bracelets, mm-hmm. how would we fulfill orders, where does the money go, the whole bit, and the PR aspects. Right. And we launched that campaign several years ago, I guess maybe 4 years ago now. And the students, it was all their idea. They also had the brilliant idea of doing a crowdfunding campaign to raise the money to actually make the bracelets. So we raised about $30,000 on the Indiegogo platform, which gave us enough money to manufacture 10,000 bracelets. And the media coverage that we were able to generate and the social media conversation around this campaign, the crowdfunding campaign, the availability of the bracelets generated millions upon millions of dollars of exposure. And what's fascinating is not only did we raise the money for the Committee to Protect Journalists, and we are still selling the bracelets. The campaign is called Press Uncuffed, if anyone's interested in buying a bracelet.
We'll put that in the show notes.
There you go. Not only were we able to raise the money and the awareness, but for countries that are wrongfully imprisoning journalists, and they'll come up with bogus charges to hold, right. Espionage, spying, all kinds of things. And what they'll do is keep them in prison as long as they possibly can. And for some countries, if they get exposed for the human rights violation that is, if they get exposed enough, it will put pressure on them to release the person from prison. And I'm proud to say we have had 13 journalists in the Press Uncuffed campaign, and the 11th one is about to be released any moment now in Egypt.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic.
And we entered that for national awards. We've won awards for that campaign. So when someone asks you a question, what's the most meaningful campaign you've ever worked on? To be able to talk about not just the exposure that we generated, but that kind of result. And I'm not saying that it was just our campaign that helped release the journalists, but in many cases, it applied pressure that was a contributing factor to the release of 11 of our 13 journalists. Unfortunately, two of them remain in prison.
Congratulations.
Thank
you. That's amazing. I mean, because you're impacting people's lives through the work that you did and your team did with the students.
Right, and just an example of impacting lives, one of the journalists is actually a dual citizen of America and Iran, mm-hmm. James Ryan, mm-hmm. was running the Tehran Bureau for the Washington Post, mm-hmm. and he got caught up in the nuclear deal that Obama was doing with Iran. He became a pawn, essentially, mm-hmm. in that deal, and he had been interviewed by Anthony Bourdain. He had done a lot of stories about Iranian culture and to try to show Americans reading the Washington Post that Iranians are a lot like Americans in many ways, that we shouldn't get too caught up in what we see on TV about how they hate us and how they believe we are the devil. certainly there is that sentiment in Iran, but most day-to-day Iranians don't feel that way. And that kind of coverage made the Iranian government extremely uncomfortable. How could anyone compare Iranians to Americans? For the Revolutionary Guard, for the people who are in charge, the supreme leader in Iran, that is blasphemy. So they put him in prison. And he eventually got out after more than 300 days in prison. But he was one of our journalists, and it was a great opportunity to get Americans to really focus on this issue of press freedom, which is more acute abroad than it is here, although we're having our own issues with it here in recent years. But the fact that he was born in California, he was a dual citizen, he wrote for the Washington Post, and eventually he was released. But before he was released, one of his cousins from California reached out to me and said, I would really like to get bracelets with his name on it in the hands, on the wrists of his mother and his wife, who are in Iran right now, fighting for his freedom. They are in court with him, working to get him freed. And I think it would mean a lot to them if they could put that bracelet on their wrist. But I couldn't ship to Iran. So I had to ship the bracelets to California, to the cousin who was giving them to someone who was on their way to Tehran who could hand carry them. And so I have since had the opportunity to speak with Jason's mother on the phone and meet Jason and his wife in person. And his wife, so you talk about having an impact on real people's lives. His wife shared with me that she and his mother wore the bracelets every day when they were there in Iran. And Yegi, his wife, had been in solitary confinement for 70 something days herself. They were both arrested. She was a journalist too for Bloomberg. And she said that the Revolutionary Guard said to her in prison, what is that bracelet? What is that you're wearing? Because they're paranoid about everything. Mm-hmm. And they lied and told the guards that they were blood pressure monitors.
Wow.
I don't know why they didn't see Jason resign and the Iran right. on the bracelet. But anyway, to have that kind of connection to the cause and to hear directly from his family and from him how grateful he was for the support that we were providing. It doesn't get better than that.
Seriously. I mean, you've taken all of your knowledge, all of your PR knowledge and all of your business acumen and your love for media, the media really, and turned it into good, you know, and
Thank
all
you.
Your connections. Yeah, no, I think that's amazing. I really do. So, yeah. So, I mean, and that's just one slice of your day-to-day life, you know, in what you're doing. So do you feel like being in the Hoboken, New Jersey, that gives you the access to New York City, even though your clients are everywhere and doing business everywhere?
It's an interesting question because, as I said at the top of the interview, I grew up in Maryland. I'm very proud of my Maryland roots. A lot of our clients are based in the Baltimore and Washington markets. But when I decided to move to Hoboken, I took the job in New York, and that's why I moved.
Okay.
And it was a really interesting time in my life because I had just gone through a divorce. I was very young when I got married the first time. And I was reflecting on this recently. When I was getting married, of course, I was sure of it. I thought I was making a good decision. A lot of my loved ones were not sure of my decision. And I was just recalling a conversation I had with my mom before I got married. And she was trying to not overtly discourage me because she knew that would backfire on her. But I remember sitting with her at my dining room table. And she said to me, I feel like he's going to stand in the way of you accomplishing greatness. I feel like you're destined for something big and he's going to stand in your way. And I remember saying to her, no, he won't. And I, in my mind, thought, no, he won't. He's not that kind of person. But he was that kind of person, I later learned, a couple years later. Mm-hmm. But I always carried with me what my mother said that day. And I think about that now as a mother, the impact of even a small statement, what that can have on your child and how they carry that with them to use in future situations. And so once I got out of that unhealthy relationship, I was the ripe old age of 26, I think. I was married 24 to 26. After a year or so after that, I decided to try living somewhere else. And it was really funny because I got this job in New York working for Havas, which is one of the big global networks. And mm-hmm. I was there for 3 years. When I got that job, I let my former sister-in-law know that I was leaving Maryland. We were very close. We still are close. So this is my ex-husband's sister. And she said to me, when I told her I was leaving, she said to me, "I feel like the rest of your life is up there waiting for you."
Wow.
Profound, right?
Yeah.
And she was right. So to go back to your question of how do I feel about having my business based here, I did feel very connected to this area as soon as I got here. I love the pace of New York. I love the energy. I love the global feel of it.
Yep.
So many opportunities. Just this weekend, I took my daughter, who's 11, to Manhattan for a girls' day. And we were just walking around Union Square. And there's so much history there, of course. But just walking around, and there's always a new store open. Mm-hmm. Celebrities are around. Famous authors are around doing book readings. It's just such a unique place. The vibrancy of it all. So when I started my business, I, of course, had no reason to leave here. But here I am 16 years later, and I do feel like it helps to be in a media center.
Yes.
The media center of the United States.
Yes.
When you're involved in this world. So my office is in Hoboken, which is right across the Hudson from mm-hmm. Manhattan. And I'm right across the street from the PATH station, which is the train you take 12 minutes, you're in Manhattan. And it also helps too for recruiting. You know, we have do have clients in New York City, but it also helps for recruiting. We've had people come from Manhattan, from Brooklyn. So I do, I like being in this area. That's kind of a backstory of how I got here, but I do very much like being in this area. And I think it is great for the business that I'm in.
Yes, yes. So I love what your mom said about her feeling like you were destined for greatness. I love that, because fast forward to where you are today and the story that you just told about what you're doing for the Committee to Protect Journalists, I mean, that's greatness. That is greatness. And so, and I think it's great that you're a mom and you're a working mom and you're role modeling for your daughter, what it is to be a business owner and a girl boss and all of those things. So my finale question is always, what's the bravest thing that you've ever done and how does it inspire you today?
Well, of course, I know that's the name of your show.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about it. And one thought I had was, I think it's really hard to judge your own bravery mm-hmm. because we all rise to our occasions. And I look at other people who have done things that are much braver than I've ever done, and they do what they have to do. So it's a hard question for me to answer because, yes, I've had occasions and I've risen to them. But I will share one story that to me is a story of bravery. It's not just my bravery, but the bravery of my daughter. A year ago, I decided to audition for a live storytelling event. I don't know if you've ever heard of Listen to Your Mother. It's a It started in New York, but it became a national event. So it happens in markets all over the country.
Okay.
If you're familiar with Moth on NPR, it's similar to that.
Yes.
But it is people getting up and telling 5-minute live stories about motherhood. So it can be about your own experience as a mother, your experience as the daughter or son of a mother. It really can be any aspect of motherhood. And I had a story that I wanted to tell. So I decided to audition last year, which was really stepping out for me. And you know, because we're in the same industry, that we've spent decades telling other people's stories. but not telling our own.
Correct.
So that was an interesting experience on its own, just auditioning for something and then making the cast, which was super exciting. The fact that I was on a cast and going to rehearsals, I haven't been on a cast since the sixth grade talent show.
Right.
So that was really special too. And the story that I told, so maybe there's a little bravery in getting up on a stage. We did two live shows, hundreds of people at each show, the bright lights in my face. I've never experienced anything like that. The lights were so bright, I couldn't even see the audience, which was probably a good thing. But the story that I decided to tell was a really difficult story. And so I think that even though the experience itself required some bravery, the story in particular did. And I'll share a quick version of it with you here. But as I said, it's really about my daughter's bravery more than mine. When my daughter was just about to turn 9 years old, she came forward after a couple of weeks of a lot of anxiety mm-hmm. and turmoil. She came forward to tell me that she had been inappropriately acted upon, I'll just say, mm-hmm. by a male babysitter. And she didn't know what to do with that information. It had happened over the course of 15 months, a couple of different times. And she was so young, she was 8 years old. She really didn't even understand what was happening, mm-hmm. that it was part of a plan, that he was grooming her. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I had started to have conversations with her mm-hmm. about sexuality, age-appropriate conversations, which gave her the context and the language that she needed to be able to tell me what was happening and that she was confused by it, but knew it wasn't right. And that even though he was telling her not to tell anyone, she knew she needed to speak up. And my story that I told at the Listen to Your Mother event was not about what he did to her, because I wasn't interested in telling that story. It was about her having the bravery to tell me that night that she told me when she couldn't go to sleep what was going on so that I could step in and help her. And I really wanted to share that story with that audience because I felt like it was a great cautionary tale for others to hear. I was able to step in and protect her and really honor her bravery so that things didn't get worse. Fortunately, we were able to stop it before it had crossed a line that nobody wanted to cross. But she also saved many, many other people, because if someone is inclined to do that, they're likely to try doing it with other people. So it was a very difficult story to tell. And you can tell just in the way I'm talking to you about it that it's still hard for me to talk about. But I will never stop being in awe of her bravery, her strength. And I have such confidence in her now that she will never let anyone cross any lines with her. She will always stand up for herself. She will protect herself. She will protect other people. So it's really her bravery that I was admiring and celebrating when I stood up there on that stage and told that story.
Thank you for sharing. I think that you deserve a lot of credit as her mother for creating a safe space for her to come forward. So she's lucky. She's lucky that you're her mother. But, you know, I'm sorry for what happened. But I think that you were brave being her mother in that situation, and then you had the courage to then audition and be cast and Listen to Your Mother. And like you said, that's gonna help other people in ways that you'll never know.
So many people came forward to me after and shared their own experiences of someone doing something inappropriate to them. And in some cases, they never had talked to anyone about it before. They had all kinds of challenges in their life and struggles because they didn't have the safe space. They
Correct.
Had been buried. And the other thing that I thought was interesting was I was able to help my daughter because that night in particular, it took her about 3 or 4 hours to come out with it. I could see something was wrong. And to have that patience as a mother, our inclination, right, is always, oh, just go to bed. You'll feel better in the morning, or let's see how you feel in the morning. But for some reason that night, I had the patience to sit there with her and to wait with her and to hold her until it came out. And that was the other piece of feedback that I got from countless people was, thank you for reminding me that I need to be patient with my children and I need to really be in tune with them and what they're feeling and to listen to them, especially at night. And that was the name of my piece was Anxiety is a Nocturnal Creature, because that's when it comes out. Think about our own anxieties, right?
Once
Yes. our mind is quiet in the evening, it all starts to enter again, all those anxieties. So yes, it was a wonderful feeling, a difficult story to share, but a wonderful feeling to get that feedback from people who were in the audience that day.
Well, and thank you for sharing it on the podcast too, because there's going to be somebody on the podcast that needed to hear that story that, you know, we wouldn't even know what they're going through or the situation or what they may have gone through. And so thank you for allowing yourself to be vulnerable and to share her story through your lens, basically. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for giving me the space to do it.
Yeah. Well, I just really appreciate you being on the show. I appreciate you sharing your wisdom. If someone is interested in finding out more about RoseCom, what's the best way for them to find RoseCom? And we can put this all in the show notes still.
Sure. Our URL is RoseCom with 2 M's.com. And I'm also on Twitter at RoseCom with 2 M's.
Great, great. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I just wish you the best of luck with your boutique firm. And I know you're doing great things out there in the world. And I just admire you from afar now that I'm not working with you, but it was nice to run into you.
Well, thank you for having me on. It was great to reconnect with you too.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Brave Girls with Tracy M as much as I did creating it. Each show is produced with you, the listener, in mind, as you look for inspiration and motivation from other brave souls as you pursue your desires. I'd love to hear your feedback, so please leave me a review on iTunes. I read every one. And check out my website, tracym.com, for more free resources. You can also join my list and sign up for my newsletter right from the homepage. Until next time, stay strong, believe in your dreams, and go do something brave.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Brave Girls with Tracy M and hope that you enjoyed the show. For more information about today's episode, as well as additional free resources to help you achieve greatness in your life, visit tracym.com and sign up for our mailing list. Until next time, dream big, believe in yourself, and let your brilliance shine as only you can do.